Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that the colonists had overthrown their governor and had gotten the king to send them a new one. The king wasn't happy with the colonists thinking they could just kick out a governor. That was the king and only the king's right. But after some back and forth, the king sent them a man named William Berkeley. So now we've gotten rid of that Scrooge, British Empire tyrant, Governor Harvey. The people of the colony and the colonial government had actually accomplished kicking him out of office. This was a big deal. It was the first time that the colony of Virginia had asserted its desires and needs over the needs of England. Of course, they were still an English colony, and they were fiercely loyal to the English throne. They weren't so much saying screw you to England as they were saying, hey, Mother England, would you please take this horrible creature away from us and send us someone who's better? We humbly ask you this because we know how much you love and care for us. They weren't in revolt against England. It was just a slight rebellion because the king had been so angry that the colonists assumed they had this power that he had the terrible governor go back to the colonies, even knowing how terrible he was. He wasn't about to let the colonists think they could dismiss people he had chosen, or that they had any power to do anything without his permission. And he was right. They couldn't do this. But the colonists pushed anyways. This moved the goalpost a little bit. Now, the king was well aware that the colonists weren't going to sit back and take whatever was dealt to them quietly. And, more importantly, the colonists knew that they had the power to change things, even if only in a small way. They also gained experience in standing up for themselves. This experience wouldn't lead to much until after the next governor, Governor Berkeley. His story is that of Anakin Skywalker, hero to all in Virginia, the darling of the people, the defender of justice and the good. He would endure a crisis in the government, one that would see the people rise up against him, one that would cause his fall from the glory of the people's hearts. Like Governor Harvey, he would be forced out of office. And like Governor Harvey, he would return to that office. When he returned, he was no longer a Jedi Knight. He was Lord Vader. He was dark and twisted and full of hatred and rage, and he unleashed this rage upon the people in a way that had never been seen before or since. But first, we start from the beginning. A small background on who exactly was Sir William Berkeley before the king chose him as governor of Virginia. Governor Berkeley grew up in England in a wealthy family. He spent most of his youth actually living inside the king's palace. He was a member of the super elite group of men that surrounded the king. He was like a lady-in-waiting, but for the king. This meant that he was around the king all day, every day. He helped the king get dressed in the mornings and undressed in the evenings. He went on hunts with the king, went traveling with the king, sat at banquets with the king, and was the closest thing the king could have to a best friend. Berkeley even went to war for the king. He rode out into battle to fight for him. He would have gladly died for the king. This would explain why Governor Berkeley was so intensely loyal to the king. King Charles made Berkeley the governor of Virginia in 1642. Berkeley arrived and immediately got to work setting things up. Berkeley, and Berkeley alone, chose all the police, all debt collectors, and all judges. He also chose all of the people on the Governor's Council, which was half of Virginia's government, the other half being elected by the people. He was in control of the colony. He had to answer to the council in England and to the king, but like other governors before him, everyone in the colony had to answer to him. You might think that the half of the government that was elected would be free from his control, but that wasn't the case. He used the police to ensure votes that he wanted were the votes that were returned in the elections. This made it so that most of the people elected were also military members who were directly under his control in the military. Not much freedom from the governor going on here. On top of that, a lot of the people who were elected were also judges that were chosen by Governor Berkeley. Their existence as judges depended on being on his good side. So they weren't likely to stand up to the governor either. He basically controlled the entire government. One way or another, everyone bent to his will. Unless England stopped him, he could do whatever he wanted, and if it were illegal for him to do so, he could just issue a new law making it legal. This wasn't too bad because luckily he was a good governor, at least in his first time around. One of the assembly members years later said that proof of Governor Berkeley's good nature and fair justice was in the fact that later in Berkeley's life, when his enemies had a chance to ruin him, they chose not to. And that in fact, there was not one man that either publicly or privately charged him with injustice. The generous new Governor Berkeley had determined that he would not punish Governor Harvey's enemies, and the old rivalries would come to an end. His term as governor would start a new day for the colony. In fact, some of the men who had led the mutiny against Governor Harvey were selected by Governor Berkeley to sit on his council. His decision to not use the government of Virginia to hunt down those he disliked was an enormous benefit for the development of the colony. Without the fear of injustice, new laws could be created, justice could be dealt out fairly, and matters that needed attention could be discussed by the assembly. That the colonists were quite happy under his rule is evidenced by the fact that shortly after Berkeley arrived in Virginia, a representative of the assembly left for England to plead the case for bringing back the Virginia Company. Yes, that Virginia Company. The same one we discussed in previous episodes that had once owned all of Virginia until the king took the colony from them. So this representative went before Parliament in England and was like, "Hey, so the colonists want the Virginia Company to come back and rule over them again. They don't want the king to be in charge." When Berkeley called the assembly together to ask about this, the assembly denied the whole thing and said that the guy in England must have misunderstood their instructions. They then wrote a letter addressed to the king telling him that they didn't want the Virginia Company to rule over them again. They were happy with Governor Berkeley. In the letter to the king, they laid out how unhappy they were before Berkeley came along and said that they desired to remain under the king's care and protection. Governor Berkeley was so thoroughly loved by the colonists that they gave him a large orchard with two houses as a gift not long after he arrived. Even when he left to fight for the king had suspended his pay since he was no longer actively serving as governor of the colony. To help him out a bit, the colonists imposed a tax on themselves to pay for part of his salary so he wouldn't lose money while he was away with the king. One of the things the colonists loved him for was that he allowed people who had been convicted to appeal their case to their elected representatives in the assembly. Before this, people had to take their appeal to a court that was appointed by the governor. Taking this right to appeal a case to the people that were elected gave a voice to the middle and lower classes in the justice system. He also got rid of a tax that was placed on every man in the colony. That tax was used to pay a salary. Instead of every man automatically having to pay a tax just for being alive, people would have to pay a tax based on how much land they owned. Unfortunately, this only resulted in a lot of arguing and back and forth, and nobody really figuring out how to put this in place. So they had to go back to taxing each man just for being alive, regardless of how much land he owned. But it was still something that the colonists thought was really cool of him to try. Another cool thing he did was signing a law that said the people of Virginia couldn't be taxed without their consent. We've heard this a lot. This was already the law in England. And remember that from day one, the colonists in Virginia were promised that they had the same rights as all Englishmen, as though they were on English soil itself. The law that Virginia passed was really to make sure that there was no confusion about this taxes part. A governor couldn't come in and start ordering new taxes. He had to get the approval of the representatives in the government. People would elect representatives depending on how that representative would vote for things like taxes, just like we do today. So any tax would have to have the people elect a person that would then give approval to any new tax. In this way, people had a voice in new taxes and could vote out representatives that approved too many taxes. So, Governor Berkeley in 1643 signed a law acknowledging that he needed the elected representatives' approval of all new taxes. He also signed a law saying that elected representatives couldn't be arrested while they were in session, and also couldn't be arrested until at least 10 days after the session was over. This helped the representatives feel like they weren't under threat if they angered the governor or the governor's council. They could conduct government business without the fear of being thrown in jail, at least not until 10 days after the assembly ended their session. he did a lot of other things, like limiting how much certain government officials could make in their salary and not throwing people in jail randomly like Governor Harvey had done before him. One of the things that's really important to know about Governor Berkeley is that he owned a huge amount of land in Virginia. He also owned the rights to all beavers on that land. You may be thinking, beavers? What do beavers have to do with any of this? At that time, beavers were a huge source of money for hunters in America, not just in Virginia, but all over the colonies, even the French colonies in America. People would hunt beavers and use their fur to make hats and other things that people would buy all over Europe. There was a ton of money that could be made from beavers. So Governor Berkeley owned all of this land in Virginia, and he owned the right to all of the beavers on that land. Anyone who hunted a beaver on that land had to give Berkeley some of the fur they took from the beavers, and he made a fortune off of this. He received hundreds of pounds of beaver skin each year. He could sell them, or he could have other people sell them and give him some of the money. He also had a salary the assembly gave to him from taxes. Berkeley was turning out to be a pretty great governor for Virginia. The people adored him. He was a defender of their rights, and they trusted that he would work cooperatively with the people they elected. But his time as governor was broken into parts. Only a few months after he arrived, the civil war in England had broken out. His king was in danger. Parliament had raised an army, and the king had also raised an army. The two were fighting each other in bloody battles in his homeland. Berkeley loved the king deeply and couldn't let him be attacked without being at his side, defending him. So he left for England, and he fought beside the king in battle. He stayed there in England, fighting to protect the king for over a year. During this time, he kept the title of governor of Virginia while someone else ruled as governor until he could return. About a year and a half after he left for England to fight for the king, another massacre had taken place in Virginia. In 1644, a second massacre swept through the colony. In 1622, the natives suddenly rose against their English friends, sometimes right at their breakfast table, and surprise butchered everyone they could in Virginia and every Virginia settlement they could, with the purpose of extinguishing all Englishmen from the colony. They nearly succeeded, and years of bloody wars followed. Now, 24 years later, in 1644, it happened again. Opie Canco was the mastermind behind the massacre of 1622. He had been the chief of the tribe in the area. Now, he planned this massacre as well. The massacre of 1622 had caused the colonists to change the very laws and ways in which they interacted with the natives. No longer would they try to convert them into Christianity as they had done before. No longer would they be allowed to trade with them without first getting permission from the governor. No longer would the natives sit side by side with the families at breakfast or the fireplace in the evenings. Because of these changes, people who were in the towns and villages were spared from the slaughter. Most of the victims were out in the frontier, away from the protection of the towns and villages. Still, no less than 500 colonists were butchered in the attack. Another immediate war between the natives and the colonists followed. At this time, Governor Berkeley was defending his king in England, but he was still the governor of Virginia. He had to go back. He didn't leave right away, and it must have been tremendously difficult for him to leave the side of the man he had spent his life protecting and loving as a close friend. But his responsibilities to Virginia had forced his hand, and he finally made it back to the colony in the middle of 1645. He immediately jumped from one war into another. He led the forces out against the enemy natives who had attacked the colonists. The perpetrators of the attack fled in the face of Berkeley's soldiers. He was keeping the colonists safe. Governor Berkeley himself rode out as the lead in several large quests into native territory. They slaughtered and destroyed everything that they could. The natives couldn't hope to fight them off, and they fled their own villages when Berkeley and his men drew near. The war went on for a while, and sometimes the colonists would destroy the crops of the natives, and sometimes the natives would destroy the crops of the colonists. Governor Berkeley was seen again as the defender not only of the rights of the people, but of their very lives as well. Finally, the war came to an end. Opie Canco was captured by the English and taken as a prisoner back to Jamestown. Governor Berkeley wanted to send Opie Canco to England, where he would stand trial. But a few days after the capture, one of the colonists shot and killed Opie Canco in revenge for the lives he had taken. In the same month, the natives asked the colonists to make peace with them. They signed a treaty that gave some of Virginia land to the colony. All prisoners would be returned to the colonists, and the natives officially acknowledged the King of England as the leader over their tribe. The tribe also had to pay the colony a tribute of 20 beaver furs every year. In return, the colonists would protect the tribe from their enemies, and they gave the natives the rights to some of the land in Virginia. This peace lasted for 30 years. In the meantime, civil war still raged on in England. Parliament's forces were fighting against the king's army, and Governor Berkeley was stuck in the colonies attending to his responsibilities as governor. Most of the Virginia colonists actually sided with the king. They still considered themselves Englishmen. Kings or queens had been the rulers of England for over 1,000 years. It would be like if Congress suddenly raised an army and attacked the President of the United States. Parliament didn't like the king, and the king had problems with Parliament. Parliament wanted the king gone. On top of this, remembering how strong religion was in the world at the time, almost everyone in Virginia was a member of the Church of England. They nearly fell into a civil war with Maryland because the Marylanders were Catholics. The people in the English Parliament who were attacking the king were seen as outsiders of the Church of England. They followed a slightly different version of Christianity. On top of this, most people in Virginia, from the upper class to the lower class, were doing pretty well for themselves. If Parliament won and took over the government of England, they would also take over the government of Virginia, and who knows what type of chaos or hell they would unleash on the colony. Right now, they had certainty about the laws and the ways of things. And it wasn't bad. If Parliament were in charge, things would be uncertain. Why risk it? All of this added to the general feeling of extreme loyalty to the throne in Virginia. This was all well and fine with Governor Berkeley. He was obviously a very strong supporter of the king. So strong, in fact, that he even enacted laws in Virginia that banned criticism of the king and banned talk of civil rights. If you were heard speaking support for the overthrow of the king, you could find yourself in jail and charged with treason. There were small amounts of people in Virginia who supported Parliament, but they were really small compared to most people who supported the king. And this small group of people who supported Parliament was mostly made out of the middle and lower classes who worked their land. They worked their own land and grew their own food, while the upper class had slaves and servants to do all that for them. The farmers who worked their own land felt a connection to the middle and lower classes in England who fought against the king, but there weren't enough of them in Virginia to raise an army or anything like that. Around this time, the assembly passed a law saying that everyone had to join and practice the religion of the Church of England, both in public and in private. And everyone who refused to join the church would be kicked out of the colony. Sadly for Berkeley and the colonists, and even sadder for King Charles, Parliament won the war in England and executed Charles in 1649. This meant that Parliament and its leader, Oliver Cromwell, now ruled over England and the American colonies. There was only one little problem. Governor Berkeley wouldn't surrender control to what he said were a bunch of, quote, lawless tyrants. Charles's son, Charles II, was immediately declared King of England in Virginia, and the colonists in Virginia wouldn't recognize the authority of Parliament. They wouldn't follow Parliament's orders and wouldn't listen to anything anyone in England had to say except for the orders of a king, which they believed was rightfully Charles II. The assembly also gathered and passed a law declaring it high treason to even suggest that anyone other than Charles II was the rightful ruler of England and all of England's colonies. They officially wrote down their objections to the lawless Parliament in England and praised the executed King Charles I. The assembly then went a step further and made a law stating that anyone who even listens to someone speaking against the rightful King Charles II would be charged with treason. The colonists may have taken a brave step in letting England know just how it felt and where it stood on the issue of who had control over them. But this act of bravery would have harsh consequences. When Parliament learned of Virginia's defiance, they sent soldiers to Virginia ready to use force against the colonists. The bold colonists wouldn't back down, even now. They were prepared for the fight, and so was Governor Berkeley. In fact, 2 years later, Berkeley would find himself backed by the colonial military on the banks of the river, armed with muskets and firepower, ready to fight Parliament's forces when they sailed into the James. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the showdown between Parliament and Virginia and life in the colony under the rule of England without a king. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.